Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Joe. I head up our youth ministry department here at the Community Church. Just looking out to see you guys, it's really great to see you again. Adam and I had the opportunity to take a weekend away this past weekend. We weren't here for church last Sunday. We were suffering for Jesus and the lake in the Ozarks. We really, really were trying hard to, you know, deal with the vacation and boating and nice lakes. Thank you so much for your prayers. You survived. We really appreciate that. It means a lot. But we were trying to just kind of get to the family, as much family down. We had a whole lot of celebrations, many celebrations in the month of September. We got 3 birthdays and 2 anniversaries. There's just a lot going on. And so I tried to take a week away and celebrate those things. And one of those celebrations was actually now we had our 3rd anniversary this past week. We're very, very excited about that. We just got ready to talk about that. A woman actually survived and lived with me for 3 years. It's pretty amazing. Yes, we are planning on finishing up our book. We're going to write a marriage book, and I think after 3 years we've got a lot of things to raise up. But on a serious note, I want to see kind of where we're at with marriages, how many different anniversaries, and what we're at here. So I'm going to kind of actually raise your hand with me. I'm going to see how many years of marriage we've got in this room. So if anyone's been married for 0 to 5 years or more, would you raise your hand? Anyone married 0 to 5 years or more? All right, very good. What about, let's go from 5 to 10 years? Anyone in here from 5 to 10 years you're married? Very cool. 10 to 15. You're married 10 to 15 years. Awesome. What about 15 to 20? All right, I love it. 20 to 25? Okay. 25 to 30. Man, we're getting serious now, folks. 30 to 35. Look at these guys go. All right. 35 to 40. Man. Okay, we've got to think about Lauren. How long are you there? 39. So, come on. 40? 50?
36.
36? 40. Wow. That's incredible. Can you guys give a round of applause? Wow. You know, in our culture today, you have to be honest, being married for 55 years, for 39 to 40 years, that is radical. That's something that doesn't happen in our culture anymore. That is absolutely incredible, and it's worth celebrating. I think celebrating 3 years is great, but being with 40 years is absolutely radical. It is life-changing. You know what? It's inspiring. Because when I look at somebody who's been married for 55 years, my first thought is, how do you do it? But also, I'm so admiring what you guys have done, and I'm so inspired by what you guys are doing today, and that's just really incredible stuff. Being radical is really gaining the attention of other people because you're doing something different. And we're going through a series together called Radically Relational. We started in last quarter 2 weeks ago, I should say. And we're trying to learn what it means to be radically different relationships for God. So we're going to take a look today. If you want to get started, we're going to jump into our passage that we're going to see. Now, the passage we're studying for this radical series is Acts 2. Verses 42 to 47. And we're going to learn about how this church was radical in their relationships. So jumping into 42 here, it says, they, this is the church, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who was in need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. And that is a radical church. And you hear some of the things they were doing, they were radical in every single way. And God was radically adding members to their church every single day. The church in Acts, some of you don't realize the church in Acts that started out as just a small Jerusalem. And throughout the book of Acts, which is the actions of the apostles and the actions of the church, throughout that book, which lasts about 35 years, the church is able to expand to 34 different churches across the known world, from Asia to Rome. That is explosive. That is radical. So yes, we're going to talk about radically relational. We have got to start with the most radical church ever existed, which is the church that's coming here in Acts 2. Now we've been going through several different aspects of what it is to be radically relational. And today what I want to talk about specifically is discipleship. And what does that word mean? And how can we be radical in the way that we disciple others? Now, discipleship is admittedly a very churchy word. I know for me, the only time I've ever heard of the word discipleship or discipling is in a church. Or, in my situation, I'm in a Christian college where we study to work at a church. So guess what? That's the only time I've really ever heard of the word discipleship. And I don't like using churchy words too much, but this one has some weight to it. It's very, very important. What does it mean to be a disciple? I think that's where we have to start. Well, the Greek word for disciple is methodes. You guys say methodes? I got one person over there. Thanks so much. Let's say together, methodes.
Thank you.
You got to wave up. There it is, folks. Good job, guys. I'm so proud of you. That's all the people. Well, methodes means a follower. It means a learner or a student. And when we think about the word disciple, that's the meaning how you think about it. A follower, a learner, a student. And maybe I can help you out a little bit, because I know for me, I love Greek words that have lots of applications. And I don't like to be super, super spiritual in churchy words. So when I think disciple, I can think of a follower, a learner, or a student. Now the Bible has some very specific things to say about what it means to be a disciple. And we have these two core principles. First off, Jesus said to us in Matthew 4:19, come, follow me, and I will send you out to fish for people. Has anyone ever fished for people before? What type of bait do you use if you're going to fish for people? If you're an athlete, you know that all you have to use for me, to fish me, is peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And tell you what. But Jesus calls us to fish for people, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but when he's talking about it, we've got to go out and pursue others. Win them over for Christ and bring them back into his church. That's what he's supposed to do. Come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of people. So the first thing, if you want to be a disciple, is you got to follow. Who do you have to follow? You have to follow Jesus. We have a lot of disciples all over the world. We have disciples of education, disciples of careers. We have mentors and mentees. We have people following others all the time. But if you're going to be a Christian, you have got to learn. We have got to be discipled by. We have got to follow Jesus. That is so important. I know for me, that's sometimes confusing, because sometimes I start learning from other Christians, and I start defining myself as a follower of that Christian. And we'll get to that in a little bit, but sometimes I get a little confused. It's not following other people. It's not following pastors. It's not following churches. It's not following authors and books. It's being a follower of Jesus. That is the first priority of being a disciple of Christ. You got to follow Jesus. And then there's a second main principle to being a disciple of Christ, and that comes from Matthew 28:19-20. Jesus speaking, he says, therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. So we have our second principle. We've got to follow Jesus. We've also got to make disciples. We also got to teach other people to follow Jesus. If you want to be a disciple of Christ, you've got to do two things. Number one, you've got to follow. And number two, you got to teach others to follow. That's what it means to be a disciple. All right, we're done. I think we're good. We can wrap it up right here. You guys go home early. You've learned enough for today. Tell you what, I'll keep on because I might come. But that's where we're going to start out with. If you don't remember anything else today, we're going to go through two things. Number one, you've got to be a follower of Jesus, nobody else. And number two, you've got to learn to teach others to follow him. That's a disciple. But what does that look like? Because it can be very easy for somebody to get up and speak to you once a week, maybe once a month. And you can hear what they're saying, but it's very hard to apply it to our lives. I know that's kind of where I trip up a lot. I hear really good people all the time. Whether it's on Caleb on the radio, or if you listen to a podcast, or I can read an email, it's really good, inspiring information. It's like, wow, that was awesome. And I just kind of work that in my life. You know what? I forget what I've been taught. I never apply it to my daily life. I've done and learned nothing. So we're going to talk about what it means to be a disciple. And we get back to talk about what it looks like on a daily, on a practical basis to be a disciple of Christ. And there are three major ways that we have got to learn to be a disciple. We're going to walk through together. But there are three major ways we have got to learn to be a disciple. If you're going to live out discipleship, the first thing you have got to do is learn what Jesus did. Now, we might think to ourselves about three things. Because you've got to think to yourself, well, yeah, I'm going to be a student of anything. Obviously, I have to learn what that subject is all about. And if I'm going to be a follower of anyone, I'm obviously going to have to learn exactly what it is that they're doing. But sometimes we miss this part. And we don't do a very good job of learning what Jesus did. So if you're going to start out in discipleship, the first thing you got to do is take that time. You've got to learn what he actually did. And we're going to take a look at three awesome areas of Jesus' life that he performed with excellence, with perfection. The first thing, he taught the scriptures to both individuals and to groups of thousands of people. He was a teacher. He knew how to teach the word of God. He knew how to preach the scriptures in such a way that people would stop what they're doing and listen to him. It wasn't just the words that he spoke, but it was also the actions that he lived out. And check this out. We know that in John 4, Jesus tells one woman, it was a Samaritan woman by the well. He talked to her about the water of life. This one person. That's so cool. The God of the universe, in human form, took time out of his day to talk to one person because she was worth it. And he sat down with her next to a well and he explained to her that she could have everlasting water, the water of life. That's so cool. Jesus is a teacher in John 4. In Matthew 26, he said, Jesus teaches Simon, who was a Pharisee, and disciples about the beauty of serving God. That he worked in small groups to facilitate discussion on the small scale. And then in Matthew 5, we see that Jesus gave a sermon on the mount to thousands of people. That he wasn't ashamed of the gospel, but that he was willing to proclaim it to thousands and multitudes. That's who our Jesus is. Willing to take time to talk to one, hang out with a few, and having the courage to proclaim the gospel of Jesus, the gospel of God, to thousands. So yeah, we've got to learn what Jesus did. You know what? One of the things he did was he taught the scriptures. Another thing that Jesus did, he prayed frequently and passionately. He talked to God on a regular basis. Luke 6:12 says, it was at this time Jesus went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. Mark 1:35 says, in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went away to a secluded place. And was praying there. And Luke 5:16 says that Jesus himself would often slip away to the wilderness and pray. So we're going to learn what Jesus did. We've got to acknowledge that Jesus was a prayer. And he's a prayer warrior. He loved talking to his Father. He loved having that relationship, having that communication. And that's something that sometimes I really struggle with personally. Is trying to learn how to pray and have passion and on a regular basis. Because to me, sometimes I get distracted with life, I get pretty busy. You know what's so cool about Jesus? He's never too busy to pray. We get up early in the morning, we stay up late at night, and we stay busy and talk to his Father. So yeah, I'm going to learn what he did. Yes, he taught the scriptures and he prayed frequently and passionately. There are so many things Jesus did, but we're going to try to bring down just one more major aspect of his life. Jesus loved everyone. even those who were hated by others. He loved everybody. He embraced a leper in Luke 5. You guys aren't sure what a leper is. It's somebody with very contagious and deadly disease. Obviously, it's kind of gone away nowadays, but back then, it was a very big deal. When somebody came down with leprosy, they would be kicked out of the city. Like, everything's gone. Pack and bag, get out of here. They wouldn't be allowed to talk to their families anymore. They wouldn't be able to see their friends anymore. They had to live in the wilderness. Outside of the city gates, they didn't have access to anything because people were so scared that they would be contagious and other people would be affected with leprosy. And to touch a leper was absolutely dead. You never, ever, ever do that. But here we have Jesus in Luke 5, where he's helping a man with leprosy. He prays for him and he heals him on the spot. Jesus loved everyone, even the untouchables. Jesus ate with criminals, as we see in Matthew 9. He's hanging out, dining with a bunch of thieves and criminals and people that nobody respected and nobody liked. And he didn't care. Why? Because Jesus loved everybody. And we know that he rescued an adulterer in John 8. Somebody in the middle of sin, a sinner, just like every single one of us, Jesus stepped right up and guarded that woman from being prosecuted, accused, and charged with a major crime of that day. He stepped in, he stopped that, he protected her. Not because she was innocent, no, but because Jesus knew that mercy in that moment outweighed justice. And he would rescue me and every one of us sinners, just like he rescued that woman. In John 8. Jesus loved everyone, even those who hated. Jesus prayed frequently and passionately. And Jesus lived a life that was teaching the scriptures at all times, both with words and with actions. So yeah, we're going to learn about discipleship. We're going to learn about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. We've got to know what he did. Well, guess what? Those are three major things that Jesus did. And this is the tough part. Because once you learn what Jesus did, you're going to be a disciple, you have to follow. And that brings us to point number two, maybe the way that we can be a disciple. Well, guess what? We got to do what he did. How many parents are there? Got any parents going on? Yes? Very cool. How many parents here can testify that there have been times, maybe just once, twice in your entire life, but there have been times where your child doesn't do what you ask them to do? Has that ever happened? Are you sure? This is shocking information. Okay, we got a hand for you. Fair enough. Very good. You have a specific child in mind. I love it. Absolutely. Well, think about it this way. If you, as a parent, would go to your son or daughter and say, hey, go clean your room, what's the expectation? I'm pausing for effect. Expectation to be clean your room. Is that very exciting? What happens if your son or daughter came back 30 minutes later? They say, hey, dad, mom, I wrote down what you said. I memorized it. And now I'm back, I can recite it to you. Go clean the room. What do you think? Would you be impressed with that? No! Because that's not what you asked them to do. You didn't ask them to memorize your command. You asked them to do it. What happens if that son or daughter walked away from you and they spent 2 hours, they called up their friends. All their friends got together in their room, like 5 kids hanging out, smelled through the bed, it's all teenage. And they're all hanging out, they're all talking to each other, and you hear some commotion going on upstairs, because you hear them in that person's room, where a girl or whatever. And all of a sudden, after 2 hours, the group comes down in the kitchen. And they have big smiles on their face. They're so proud of themselves. And they inform you as a parent, mom, dad, we just took a 2-hour conversation and dedicated to studying your words. And we have developed this awesome strategy of what it means to go in your room. We looked it up in all the languages you can, the Latin, the Greek. We looked it up in all the different ways you learned. All of us memorized. And you know what we're going to do now? Is we're going to go to our friends. And we're going to recite what we memorized because you told us. Would you be proud of that day at all? Probably not. Why? Because they still haven't done what you asked them to do. But why is it in the Christian church do we lose sight of the fact that Jesus commands us to follow his example. And oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, we stop at simply memorizing what he said. We stop at simply hearing about his words on a Sunday morning in church. Or we stop at simply telling somebody else, hey, you should read what he said too. That'd be really cool. That's not being a follower. Having that type of child in your family, you're not going to accomplish anything. That room will never get clean. And just in the same way, we will never make followers of Jesus if we stop at simply memorizing what he said, or we stop at simply showing up on Sunday morning. So you can have somebody else who study what he said, tell you what he said. That doesn't work that way. So point number two, we have got to do what Jesus did. It's not enough just to learn what he did, but we have got to do it. Check this out in John 14, verse 21. It says, those who accept my commandments and obey them are the ones who love me. Those who accept them and obey them. How about that for a little bit back? We got kids cheering on right there. Yeah, those who accept the commandments of Jesus and those that obey them, those are the ones who love me. Wow. Ephesians 5:1 says, follow God's example. Therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us. Follow my example. Follow Jesus' example. Follower, a disciple. We've been called to be disciples. We've been called to make disciples. In order to do that, we've got to accept his commands. We've got to obey. And we've got to follow his example. We cannot stop at simply reading his words every once in a blue moon. That's not what discipleship is. That's not what the Christian life is. The Christian life is following his example every single day of our lives. And then the last point of being a disciple of Christ, what does that last point look like? Well, we talk about learning what Jesus did, doing what Jesus did, and hey, guess what? We've got to teach others to do what you're doing. And that might be the most intimidating one yet. Check it out. Teach others to do what you're doing. If somebody had a camera crew and followed you around for 24 hours, and they decided to make that into a documentary, and they were going to show that documentary at a cinema, any cinema, and people were going to watch your life in 24 hours, and whoever was hosting that meeting would say, okay, this person, whatever you see in this documentary about this person, I'm going to challenge all of you. You've got a crowd of people paying attention. You're pretty popular if you want to see them. Congratulations. But the host would say, whatever you see this person doing in this documentary, I want you to copy. And I want you to do it for the rest of your life. Wow. I don't know about you guys, but I know for me, I would never want someone to say a documentary like that. Wow, is that intimidating? Absolutely crazy. But you know what? That's exactly what we're called to do. Check this out. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. Paul is speaking. He says, imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. That is the quintessential verse of a disciple for Jesus. Imitate me just as I imitate Christ. Man, parents, think about your kids. Little baby kids, they're growing up. How do you teach? Do what I do. Say what I say. Do what I tell you to do. Watch my example. You have ever been a teacher or an educator, professionally or recreationally or whatever else you want to say, a coach, anything like that. How do you teach people? Do what I do. Listen to what I'm saying. Learn from my example. That's how we teach. That's how we learn. That's how we develop coaches and people that follow after us. But is there anything more intimidating than realizing that spiritually speaking, people are learning from you all the time. what are they learning about you? Paul had the confidence to say, you can imitate me. You can do whatever I'm doing. Copy my example. Why? Because I know that I am copying, I am imitating Jesus in everything that I do every single day. And that's confidence. That's being a disciple. That's being radical. That's changing the world. Paul changed the world. One person at a time, one church at a time, one city at a time, one nation at a time. Paul changed the world because he was a disciple. He wasn't afraid to say, imitate me as I imitate Jesus. Maybe the hardest thing to do is the most important thing to do, folks. And maybe you're like me and you think to yourself, I'm not qualified. I don't have a doctorate in theology. I have got no educational background, no professional background. I have no credibility that would be strong enough or effective enough to tell anyone to copy my example. I don't know if you guys think that, but I know I think that often. I've been doing ministry for 11 years. I think that all the time. That's kind of pathetic, right? We're going to have a little therapy session and part of the leadership. But what does that mean? Every single day, showing people to copy you. And the intimidation that I'm not qualified. I just had too much sin in my life. I didn't know enough about Jesus in my life. I didn't know enough about God at all to ask somebody else to copy what I am doing. I think that intimidation stops us, makes us hesitant every single day of our lives. And yeah, like I mentioned, I've been in ministry for a while, and I went to school for it, and I've had the opportunity to listen and learn from really amazing, incredible minds in the theological realm and around about God. I've been able to learn a classroom from really amazing teachers. These men and women that have spent literally 20, 30 years, their entire lives studying the Word of God, earning these really prestigious degrees in whatever you want to make up except for Christianity. I've spent a lot of time learning from that, but I remember one specific story that made more of a difference in my life than any amount of time in the classrooms. When I was about 19, 20 years old, I was super poor. It wasn't just poor, I was super poor. I was at that point where, you know, we had those conversations once in a while. Maybe you guys have been there, I don't know. I was 19, 20, I was definitely living in this area. But you had to have that conversation, gasoline or food for the week, which way are we going to go here? And I would have to make these phone calls to friends and say, hey, you want to go hang out? That's awesome. Can you pick me up? That would be great because I have no way to be there. So if you come over to my apartment, pick me up, we'll go somewhere. Would you pay for my dinner? Is that cool? Like, I like to think of myself, and this is not across the board, but in my life, like this life, I was super poor. And I had a really cool car. It was a Buick Escape. And all of you were there just like that. I was the hottest thing in 8 years ago. It was a I actually got the car because my grandfather passed it down to my dad, and my dad gave it to me. So it literally was a grandpa car that I was driving around. And I drove this thing forever, because I didn't have to do anything else. And for a while, it looked great. But by the end of my newest lifespan, they started to kind of die on me. And have you ever been in a car, or a car that was just consistently dying on you? And like 1 week from the next, something else would break. That was my life with this car for about the last 6 months of owning it. And there came a time where I was desperate. My brakes need to be redone, rotors need to be put in, they need to be transmission fluid, oil change, all of this stuff. And I didn't know how to do any of it. And I was way, way over my head. The mechanic told me that, hey, yeah, I can fix this about $1,000. I was like, what? 19-year-old, 20-year-old girl was like, I'm going to be a movie doctor. What are you talking about? $1,000 to fix this car. I called a friend of mine who was part of my old church on the thing. And he works in our youth group as a leader, as a volunteer leader. He was short. And Twitter was a really named guy. He wasn't a mechanic. He wasn't a professional. He was not in the at all. He was just a named guy. And I explained my story to him. I tried to get all cool and nonchalant. Like, hey, by the way, I have my car problems. But there'd be times where people sitting out, it's actually lunch. And maybe while we're having lunch, you can food while we're in your garage working on my car. I'm going to come to that. This is the gospel. You know what? He's told not to say yes. Come on over, provide me all the problem. Got up there early in the morning, probably 7:00. Started looking at the car. He's like, wow, you've got a lot of problems with this doing. I was like, yeah, it's literally a grandpa car. It should have a lot of problems. We started working on it. And he took everything apart, assembled all the stuff that needed to be fixed. He's like, okay, we got everything on, let's get parts. I was like, that's awesome, where are parts? He's like, you have to go buy them. I was like, what? Let's go buy them together. He goes, we went over to my rallies and picked up the parts. I didn't have the money to pay for the parts. The parts were probably $300-$400 just by myself. So I was like, don't worry, I paid for the credit card. He's like, hey, you can pay back in the back door. I'm like, God, this is so cool. We got back, started finishing up the car, fixed everything. Took us the entire day. Like 7 a.m., 8 a.m., all the way to about 6, 7 o'clock at night. The entire day was there. Just working on the car. And when I say working on the car, I mean him under the hood, me in the seat, watching him do it. Because I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing. So it's just him working on the car, and me just sitting there and watching. Pretty pathetic, once again. We get under the car. Thank you so much. It works. I can drive home. I don't have to worry about dying on the interstate. He's like, hey man, it's okay. Don't worry about it. I started working on this plan and how I was going to pay back. He said, hey, I'm going to get a paycheck next week. I'm going to send this money then. I'm going to send some more money the week after. I'll need you fully paid up by the end of the month. And Troy looked at me and said, you know what? I've been thinking about that all day. And I don't need to pay anything back. And I really got it. What have we ever really done anything with that? We're talking about, you know, like $300-$400 worth of parts. If I would have had a day of labor, probably $1,000 of labor. In his world, not a huge deal. My world, he's heaven. You know what I learned that day? I learned more about what it means to make a disciple than any classroom. Because Troy took what he knew, and he was willing to give it to somebody else for free, and he said, learn from my example and do it to someone else that you know. And that really, really got me. He wasn't a Bible scholar. He wasn't a theologian. He wasn't a giant spiritual leader in his church. He was just a guy. But he knew how to do something. He gave it away for free, and then he challenged me to do the same thing with people in my sphere. That's the sign. He knew that Jesus loved me that day. And he had love in his heart to give me some free labor, some free parts, and his time to hang out around me for about 8 hours. And in the world, it really, really did. Are you intimidated to be a disciple? I understand that. I do. But you can do it, and you are qualified to do it. You can get unique gifts, every single one of you, that you can share with the world in your own way to inspire them to love somebody else. You can be disciples. We're going to ask the worship team to come on up. We got one final song we're going to sing. And as I see that, I want to challenge you. Where are you at? Are you actively learning what Jesus did? Are you actively doing what he did? Are you actively teaching others to do what you do? Not easy, but this is radical discipleship. Let's take a minute and we'll sing a song together.
Sing a song.